Hola, you're listening to La Chicas del Crime, a podcast where tres amigas sit down and talk all things true crime for Hispanic and American crimes.
This episode of Las Chicas del Crime contains explicit content not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
¿Quién somos?
I'm Osa.
I'm Kat.
And I'm Jen.
Y somos las chicas del crime.
Woo! So, now that you guys can hear me, finally, my towers blew a fucking kiss at me.
Oh,
and my fucking bitch and my camera was like recording, but not on him.
Oh, dang.
That's how you don't suck at life.
Not good, but you enjoyed the moment. At least you caught it.
Right? You fucking locked eyes with that man and he blew that kiss at you, bitch.
I sure did. There was this one little girl that was like, I think that was for me. Like, she told me that. I was like, you look 12.
He did not blow you a kiss, bitch.
Like, I'm not even trying to be rude. She looked like a little ass girl. She was probably like 16. But she looked 12, and I was like, I don't think he's trying to catch that charge, baby.
Right.
Not it, girl.
Anyway, so let's get started. Before we get started, earlier this week, with the help of DNA, Francis Wayne Alexander was identified as one of the unknown victims from John Wayne Gacy.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
This happened.
Look at that.
It was October 21 when this article was updated.
What was the date again? Repeat that.
October 25th. 2001.
Okay. Got it.
So, CNN, Francis Wayne Alexander's remains were found more than 40 years ago in a crawl space of infamous serial killer John Wayne Gacy's home. For decades, and their identity was a mystery, but through the work of a nonprofit group called the DNA Doe Project, EDP and police in Chicago area, genetic genealogy helps solve the case.
Yes.
According to the group website, a tooth of the victim was sent to the lab in California for a DNA extraction. A sample of the DNA was sent to the lab in Alabama sequencing. The data file went from genetics investigations to company in Texas that updated the information to a GED match. DNA matches in the second cousin range were found, enabling the DP's team volunteer genetic genealogic construction family trees and identifying Francis Wayne Alexander as a candidate of Gacy's victim number 5. The DNA Doe Project said Alexander's remains were found December 25th, 1978, under Gacy's home. He was killed between early 76 and early 77.
Oh, wow.
So they're putting in work. I mean,
I'm glad we're able to identify.
Yeah, his family has some closure.
Hell yeah.
So I just thought it was cool for us to update it in this sense. You know, we covered Gacy and, you know, their families are getting closure, which is what we wanted. And I mean, this didn't happen because of us, but we did say that if you guys had any missing families, members from that back then to call. So it's kind of cool that people are still working on this case since there is unidentified bodies.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then the article kind of goes into, like, the case of John Wayne Gacy, but y'all could just listen to our case. I would recommend.
Go back and find them episodes, baby, because we got the whole story.
Yes, baby. Yes, because I went fucking in. One thing I can do is go. So that was cool. Anyways, so we're back to Dahmer. It shouldn't be a super long episode because it's only my first case was the only 4 pages of notes ever.
Oh, wow.
Ever. I mean, it's my third episode, but it's only four pages. So anyways, last week, this is a new week, last episode of Jeffrey, the Milwaukee Cannibal Dahmer. Last week, we left Jeffrey with Jeffrey's victim, Matt Turner, who Jeffrey met in the after Pride in Chicago. This is when Jeffrey kind of decides to start quote-unquote hunting in Chicago, but he only goes back one time, which I'm kind of glad, because if you look at the time, that was kind of, I think that was the time where John Wayne Gacy was like getting victims out in Chicago too.
Damn.
So I'm kind of going back times, yeah. So, you know, I feel like 80s was a wild time for serial killer. They were just all wilding.
It really was.
And there's really not many ways to catch them back then.
I know.
But they were able to get away for so long with so much.
Yes.
Tons of bitches.
And like, you know, nobody was attached to a GPS phone. And now we kind of are. So, you know, if you commit a crime, leave the phone at home. Don't commit a crime. Don't commit a crime. But, you know, that's your.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Anyways, I didn't say that. So then I didn't put a date on this, which is weird because y'all know I'm a date type of girl, but I'm sorry. I didn't put a date on this. I don't know why. But he went back to Chicago, and after the bus that he took from Milwaukee to Chicago, he took a cab to the north side of Chicago. This is where he met Jeremia Weinberger, a 23-year-old man. Jeffrey met him at a gay club, so he was gay. And the only reason I'm bringing up that he was gay is because there is some victims that were not gay. And they were kind of just trying to make money. And we'll get into them in a little bit. But they were just kind of trying to make money. They weren't gay. Which, I mean, it's just details of what happened. Not that it matters, really. Not to me, anyways. Not to us. So, you know, Jeffrey met him at a gay club. They hung out. They were drinking. And then Jeffrey invited him back to his house. Weinberger was a bit hesitant because I was like, you know, they had to take a bus to go to another city or whatever. But he did end up going up with Jeffrey. Then they kept drinking. They had consensual sex. And they both later passed out because they were so drunk. The next day, though, Weinberger had told Jeffrey, like, hey, you know, it's time for me to go home. And Jeffrey was like, nah, I let you live, and now you're wilding because you're trying to leave me. That's not happening.
Okay.
So Jeffrey convinced, like, right, like, bro, we already had our good time. Let me go home. I got things to do, you know, go shower. Because you know Jeffrey's house was stinky.
Obviously. Mm-mm.
So at this time, Jeffrey convinced Weinberger to have like one more drink for the road. But unfortunately, this drink will be the last drink that Weinberger drinks.
Oh, no.
As Jeffrey spiked it. And Jeffrey spiked the drink. Weinberger passed out. Jeffrey then sodomized Weinberger before killing him.
Atrocious.
I'm so sorry. He sodomized him, and then before thinking of killing him, Jeffrey tried to make him a zombie. Jeffrey then drilled a hole and poured hot water. This was the first time Jeffrey pours hot water into his victims. All the other times, he had poured acid. Jeffrey believed that the acid was killing them, not the hole in the brain. But he was kind of right, though, because when he pours water into Weinberger's drilled hole in his head, Weinberger, instead of dying, goes into like a vegetative stage. And you know, I think from what we had learned earlier that then this will be like kind of the perfect victim for him. But Jeffrey then realizes that Weinberger is never going to be normal again. So he's like, I'm just going to kill him. He strangles him and he dismembers his body.
Wow.
He cuts up his head and puts his head in the freezer, and he puts the rest of his body in one of those big tanks that he had acid in.
What the hell?
Yes. By middle of July 1991, Jeffrey had run out of fridge space because of all the dead skulls. Because of all the skulls he had, and because of all the like limbs that he had in his fridge and heart.
Then he had plenty of them.
Very, 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 very right. True. Yes. But this was not a problem for Jeffrey because he really wasn't cooking anymore, like real food. He just kind of was like eating a little bit of the heart, a little bit of the, muscles that he was keeping. That's and perfect. Fast food. Fucking disgusting, yes. On July 15 of 91, Jeffrey went around his neighborhood and found 24-year-old Oliver Lacey. Oliver Lacey was a bodybuilder. And Jeffrey found that very attractive. Jeffrey used the same line, you know, like you want to make some money for some nude pictures. The man was into, you know, his physical form. So, of course, he was like, hey, you know, I can make some money for taking some pictures. I'm down with that. He then brought him back to his apartment. He drugged him. He killed him. Since Jeffrey found Lacey very attractive, he kept a lot of his muscles. He also kept his head and his heart.
Oh, Lord. Jesus. I'm just going to keep a little bit of everything.
Little bit. You know what I'm saying? I was going to make a joke, but that was not good a joke because it was a victim joke and it wasn't jokes. So on July 19, 1991, Jeffrey was fired from his job. This is kind of bad because now he has time to do more bad shit. And sure enough, instead of trying to look for another job, Jeffrey went around looking for another victim. This is when he found a 25-year-old Joe Brayhoft. Brayhoft was father of three who was having a bit of a rough time. He had actually came into town from another town for a job. When he got there, the job was already taken. And this is when he met Jeffrey. Jeffrey was like, hey, like it's raining. Let's go hang out in my apartment. Let's have some drinks until the rain passes out. You know, it's done. He's like, also, if you want to make some money, I'll pay you for a nude photo shoot and sex. His family later on says that Brayhart wasn't gay, but Jeffrey said that he didn't think that he was gay. He just was kind of doing it for the money. Mm-hmm. So he then got back to his apartment. They had consensual sex. Jeffrey then drugged him, strangled him. And instead of cutting him up right away, he leaves him in his bed for like a couple of days.
Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. When he finally decides to cut up his body, they had a bunch of maggots in his head.
Oh my god! Oh, I can't. Yeah. Just oh god! I literally had the visual of nasty
fat
throwing out.
So Jeffrey, like you know, sane person, No, he washed the head and put it in the fridge. And then he put the rest of the body in the big tanks.
What the fuck? I can't even imagine what this man's house smelled like.
Okay, because I feel like And there's always, a long time ago when I was learning about him, it didn't bring it up on this research for whatever reason, but I had read that he would put like the, either the dismembered bodies or the bodies before like cutting them up or already cut up in his bathtub, and he would just shower on top of them.
Like, oh my God.
Very gross.
He a whole, what is it, necrophiliac or whatever it's called?
Well, yeah, he's a necrophiliac because he has sex with them once they're deceased. And the first head he kept it for the purposes of masturbating with it. So he's big time necrophiliac. And we actually are going to get into what he was diagnosed with. And being a necrophiliac was one of his diagnoses. I can't speak today. Sorry, guys. Just bear with me. So on July 24, 1991, he met 31-year-old Tracy Edwards and two of his friends. Jeffrey invited all three of them to his apartment for money for a nude photo shoot. Edward and his friends all agreed. However, the only one that rode back in the cab with Jeffrey was Edwards. Jeffrey gave the wrong address to Edwards' two friends on purpose. So he could have Edwards home all by himself. Once in his apartment, Jeffrey gave Edwards a beer and a mixed drink, which obviously was spiked. But Edward said that there was something off, so he didn't drink a lot. He kind of had a little sip of each, not like actually just drank it. So then he was like, he later on testified, which means he survived.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yes. He said that when he was like since he was taking a long time to drink his drink, Jeffrey was getting a little anxious, and he was like, then I was getting a little anxious. He was like, and I wasn't scared of him. He looked like a friendly, nice guy. I wasn't scared of him, but you know, he was anxious. I was anxious. Then I started looking around and I saw that he had boxes of hydrochloric acid, whatever we had talked about last time. And he was like, that didn't sit right with me. And also there was a funny smell in his apartment. And at the time I couldn't tell what kind of smell it was, but now like it all makes sense. It was, you know, decomp smell.
Oh yeah. My God. I could not imagine being in there.
You feel me? Disgusting. So when Edwards goes to leave, Jeffrey pulls up his last trick from up his sleeve and handcuffs Edwards with like only in one wrist. Edwards then starts fighting back, but Jeffrey quickly pulls out a knife. When he pulls out a knife, Edwards kind of slows down and he's just like, kind of like, okay, I'm going to take it easy because he has a knife. I don't have a knife. But this is when Jeffrey tells him, I'm going to eat your heart. And then he proceeds to put his head on Edward's chest. So he's like just leaning on his chest, listening to his heart that he says he will eat later.
Wow.
Edward's then hits him and runs the fuck out. He's like, bitch,
as he should've.
Adios. While running down, he sees a cop car and he flags it down. When he flags it down, the cops that were in the car was Robert Ralph and Ralph Muller. And they weren't trying to get involved because they thought that it was domestic violence again.
Even if it was domestic violence, like what the hell?
That man is obviously distressed. Like, what is happening?
Right.
So, Edwards did convince the police officers to come back to Jeffrey's apartment. When they get there, Jeffrey was like, oh, that's just my boyfriend, and we had an argument, and he's just walling. And the cops were about to leave, but Edwards then runs into Jeffrey's apartment and goes into his room, and he's like, look, this is where the knife is. So the cop runs after Edwards and he bumps into all the Polaroids that Jeffrey had taken from all the dead bodies he had in his apartment.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
So here it goes.
Yeah, this is, and even at first the officers were like, I thought that was like a movie thing. It just did not look real. Like, it did not look real to them.
That's fucking crazy.
Ain't it? So the officers go to put Jeffrey under arrest, and there was a small struggle, but Jeffrey eventually like gives in. And when the officers call for backup, they start searching the apartment of horrors. They found heads, part of a torso, arm muscles, and hearts in the fridge. They also found half-eaten organs.
Oh my God.
And alcohol. He did have alcohol. That's all he had. Regular stuff, just alcohol.
Probably with the
They found three dismembered torsos in one of in dumb acid drums that he bought for all the, you know, acid.
Yeah.
Once in like custody, Jeffrey did confess right away, and Wisconsin did not have the death penalty, so he was looking at life in prison. Jeffrey said he had killed 60 men in Milwaukee and one in Ohio. He also, like, deadass told him all the gory details. The reason why we know so much about Jeffrey Dahmer is because he told them everything he did.
Well, he figured he got caught. He might as well just say it all.
I don't know. I don't know much about his actual psychological behind it all. I mean, more than, like, clearly he was fucking... because he found this interesting and it turned him on. But maybe he told everything because he was like, it made him feel even better about himself. Like, yeah, I did all of that. And I'm proud of what I fucking did. Fucking can't believe that.
I can see that. I can see that. That makes sense.
I definitely see him as someone who even found enjoyment of, like, telling every detail of every gruesome thing that he did.
I do think that it's very odd because, and we will get to it in a minute, but a lot of serial killers like kind of like have fat, you know, fans that write them and they write them back and be like, oh, I did this, I did that. Jeffrey didn't do that a lot. So the fact that he did tell the cops everything and was so open about everything was very different because, yes, he wanted to brag, but not to everybody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel you. I felt the same way. When he was charged, he was obviously placed on solitary confinement. And believe it or not, they gave him $1 million bail.
What?
Which is crazy. Because why the fuck are you giving somebody with 16 fucking murder charges, 17 murder charges, a bail, even if it's $1 million?
Even if it's $100 million, don't give him a bail. Like, you're...
like, he's obviously a threat to society.
Yeah, like, I...
like, what is y'all doing? What the hell is going on?
What is you doing? Jeffrey had pled guilty, but later on, he pled not guilty for reason of insanity. So this is when all, like the treatments go to see what kind of issues he has. And, you know, he's being diagnosed and talked to a couple psychologists and psychiatrists and all of that stuff. And he was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
Schizotype personality disorder. And these might be outdated. This is what he was diagnosed back then. I feel like I don't know the names. I mean, obviously Jen knows more than me. I don't know them by these names. I know them by a different name. So I think they're just outdated by, you know, the name. He was also diagnosed with cannibalism and alcoholism, which, I mean, yeah, it's true. But under the law, he was sane because a lot of the, like, the prosecutor and the defense attorney, all of them, they were saying that Jeffrey drank so he could kill. So he knew what he was doing.
Right. Yeah. He needed to find a way not to numb it, but to like get through with doing all the bad shit that he was doing, that he knew he was doing.
Exactly. On February 15, 1992, he was found sane and given 15 life sentences, a total of 957 years that he would serve in the Columbia Correctional Institute Gymnasium in Portugal, Wisconsin. In court, Jeffrey did make a statement, and it was a bunch of bullshit. He said that he was asking for forgiveness and he will pray for forgiveness every single day of his life.
Keep at it, homeboy. Well,
okay. He was then sent to Ohio so he could serve justice for his first victim, Stephen Hicks, which he did plead guilty to. He gets a life sentence there, but he was sent back to Wisconsin because Ohio didn't have the death penalty either, so it was kind of no point of him serving 1 year in Ohio and then, one life sentence in Ohio and then serving the rest in Wisconsin. So they just sent him back to Wisconsin to serve all of his life sentences there.
Well, he wasn't going to serve nothing but one.
Okay. In prison, Jeffrey was in solitary confinement since there was a hit out for him. The hit was put by, the black guys of the prison because they believed that his crimes were racially motivated. So all Jeffrey would do was sleep, then wake up for every meal and eat and watch TV all night. Eventually, Jeffrey is moved to general population, but he's still a loner. And people not really messing with him because they were kind of afraid of him. But somebody did attempt to shank his face. And he was attacked, but he only suffered minor cuts. So nothing.
Wow.
Jeffrey eventually, quote unquote, found God.
Okay.
He says that he wished he could have found God earlier because he said he didn't feel guilty of his murders when he was doing them because he felt like there was not a higher power that could judge him. Whatever. You went to church with your grandma. You don't play with me, bitch. Anyways, his brother did talk to Jeffrey like while he was in prison often, and his father visited him often as well. Jeffrey, so this is what we were talking about. Jeffrey did not write a lot of quote unquote fans or anyone for that matter, but he did correspond with a man named Jason Moss. Jason Moss was a young college student who wrote a couple of serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer, Richard Ramirez, John Wayne Gacy, and Charles Manson. He actually even went to visit some of these serial killers, and we will talk about that in my next episode. That's what I'm covering Jason Moss. And so now back to Jeffrey. While in prison, although Jeffrey kept to himself, inmates say that he will make jokes about his kills and will post his food as dead bodies, and he will like use ketchup for blood.
Wow.
That's disturbing.
Yeah.
That is very disturbing.
Very much. On November 28, 1994, while working in like a cleaning job that he eventually got so he could get some money, Jeffrey was with two other inmates, Jesse Anderson and Christopher Scarver. So, well, we know about Jeffrey Dahmer and his victims. Jesse Anderson killed his wife and stabbed himself outside of a mall and then said that two black men had attacked him and his wife.
Wow.
Yes. Christopher Scarver. Wow, indeed. Christopher Scarver, however, was known to like hate racist white people. He would like call out people for being racist, pretty much. He robbed a, I think think it was a store, if I'm not mistaken, and he was like, oh, like, you're like Hitler to some white person, and then he killed him. That's what landed him in prison. So then these three went to do, clean the gym of the prison, and I think that Scarborough was a little bit obsessed with Jeffrey because Scarborough carried a newspaper of Jeffrey and his crimes with him, like, at all times. Scarborough said that it was to remind him how evil Jeffrey was. So when they were cleaning the gym, the prison gym, Scarborough went up to Jeffrey and asked him if he had really done those things that he was convicted for. Before Jeffrey gets to answer, Scarborough picked up a dumbbell bar and hit Jeffrey repeatedly in the head until he fell down. Afterwards, he then looked for Anderson and went up to him and also hit him over the head, with the dumbbell. Jeffrey, that light, I don't know why I can't talk today, guys. I'm so sorry. Jeffrey died later that day, and Anderson died 2 days later.
Wow.
Damn, what?
And that, my ladies, is the end of the Milwaukee Cannibal Jeffrey Dahmer.
Holy shit.
That's my case.
Ooh.
And my episode on him. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think you guys have any questions. I feel like I went really deep in it. Well, I always do.
You did really good because there was stuff that I didn't know for a fact, but it still made my stomach turn. Yeah, it still gives me cringy.
He was very sick. I agree with that. He was, I told you, I think that he's like him and the toy box killer are probably like my top worst serial killers.
There's a new, today when I got on Netflix to watch You, which, by the way, I'm 3 episodes in, and I'm like, whoa. But I saw there's a new show. It's like a 4-part show about serial killers, and I'm excited. I'm gonna watch that.
Is it How to Catch a Killer?
No, it has a new name.
Oh,
it's a new one. Is this my no? That's not my,
excuse me.
It has 4 parts. So it has the Green River Killer. I always feel like I say her name wrong. Eileen Warner. So it has the Grim River Killer, Eileen, and then it has 2 parts on the Smiley Face Killer. I'm excited to watch this.
What channel is this, or what stream?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay, bet. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, it only has 4 parts, so I'm like, okay, I can tackle this. This is a quick bench. Three seasons of You, baby. I'm going to have to wait. I can't.
Okay,
easily watch 3 episodes, like, yeah, but I don't know.
I'm a little upset about that show, so I need to get on it so we could talk about this shit, because I'm very upset about it.
What season? Well, or did you finish the whole thing?
I'm done. Okay. And I started like last week.
That ending was pretty fucking nuts.
Well, the end. Come on, man. I was like, wow, this is how this show really is. Because I never, obviously, everyone's talking about it, especially now that the 3rd season's out. So, like, I have seen it. It's on my list. So, it came up at the very beginning. Every time I get on, it's like, your list, new episode. So, I'm like, I'm going to get to you. But, like, to dive into it, I'm going to get to it. I just benched Tampa Bay. So, I feel like I just benched something. So I need a little break. I gave me a little break last night watching Harry Potter.
Okay, good break.
Never a bad choice.
Let me sprinkle some things in the middle before I jump into something else.
That's always my palate cleanser as well.
Harry Potter. I'm like, let's clean it right up. Like, I needed to finish the second seventh one anyway, so I did that. And then I'm gonna do the little 4-parter, and then I'll.
You know what's crazy though? Like, I feel like Dahmer doesn't kill. I've got, like, I listened to a book, obviously, and I've seen his interviews, and I don't know. There's something about it that does not break me. And I think it's because I already knew about it. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I've definitely been way more upset than maybe, you know what it is? Well, it was an audiobook. The person who like reads the book does not make you like feel it. He has like a very deep, like a voice like this is very, oh, very monotone. So he doesn't make it. Yeah, it doesn't make.
Sorry.
Yeah, he doesn't make you feel it. It's okay, because we can, I mean, we can start recording now, but we, oh, no, that's it, guys. Bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to Las Chicas del Crime. We hope you join us next time for another episode full of crime y chisme. Give us a follow on all of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, which we will list on the description of this episode. Please also rate our show and leave us a review, as that helps bring awareness to our podcast. We appreciate it. Gracias.